it always comes back to me around play. Like, we do this to play games. And I love to play games with people. You know, when there are gaps in my schedule that I can fill with gaming, I'll reach out to be like, hey, do you want to be on a couple one-shots just for fun? Because the experiences at the table are what makes the memories for me. And so as someone who writes games now, I want to provide the tools in order to have those great experiences, because that's the most important thing to me.
Listening to the Lost Bay podcast, a show about and with indie tabletop RPG designers and creators. I'm Iko. Today my guest is Goblin Archives, designer of the contemporary horror RPG Liminal Horror. Before diving to the episode, let me tell you folks how much I'm stoked to be back after such a long hiatus. I missed you folks. What you can expect in the following months is more interviews and also a few special episodes. Anyway, back to business. Today, we'll talk about Liminal Horror. Liminal Horror starts as a hack of the RPG Cairn, the forest fantasy game by Yochai Gal. Liminal Horror has been released a year and a half ago, and since then, its ecosystem has grown significantly. It counts now two official modules, a collection of pamphlets has just been kickstarted, and a game jam is running right now until the end of October. The cool and special thing about this episode is that it's been recorded over a 10-month period. We did three recording sessions with Goblin Archives. The first one, little after Goblin had just released the game, and the last as the two official modules were released in print by Exalted Funeral. So, somehow this episode tracks Goblin Archives' journey into the indie TTRPG industry from being a new designer to becoming a more seasoned one. We recorded the first segment in October 2021, little after Goblin had released the Liminal Horror core book.
Your game is called Liminal Horror.
Yes.
How did you pick the name of the game?
Okay. When I wrote like in college doing creative writing, it was always the hardest thing, the title, right? And so when I did Liminal Horror, I just went through and wrote maybe 10, 15 different possible titles, just revolving around that concept of cosmic horror. And on my Twitter feed, there's a thing called Liminal Spaces that like puts these images in, like they always stuck with me as being extremely interesting. And so I was like, Liminal Horror.
So you said you were doing some creative writing and some poetry writing. Were you writing horror or about horror?
I guess now looking back, they definitely do fit into the genre of horror when I was writing. Maybe it was just because I was an angsty 20-year-old. There's a sort of horror to being that age and not knowing the world. But horror has never actually been the genre that I spend the most time in as like a reader and a watcher. That was definitely more sci-fi fantasy was the things that I spent just being immersed in. But, you know, as I've gotten older and reflecting back, when I was 17, I had Crohn's, and that definitely impacted my sort of early adulthood. And so looking back at those writings that I did, they definitely are tinged with a little more horror aspects. It's funny now that I've written this game and I'm sort of steeped in it, that's the kind of things I've been reading much more, but it wasn't what I initially spent a lot of time on growing up.
Goblin Archives approached tabletop RPGs kind of slowly. He read D&D 3.5 when he was in middle school during a sleepover, and then later a few other games. But he never had the opportunity to actually play a game until a few years ago.
About 8 years ago, so that would have been like in 2013. I can't remember the impetus, but finally was like, I want to play games. I want to do it. And so I bought the starter kit for 5e.
Okay.
And I got my friends together and we started playing and I started running. So I ran before I ever got to play in a game. we did a weekly game for years. The table was always open to people. If someone was like, hey, I want to play a game, I was like, okay, come on. And so sometimes we'd have up to 7 players with 2 or 3 who it was their first time ever playing a game and first time with us.
And how did you stumble across like more indie stuff, like the OSR games, or is it something recent?
So probably it's a mix of two things. With D&D, I didn't necessarily like always the traditional published stuff that was put out. I saw something online like of Caverns of Thracia, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And that's sort of those older modules, and started to look outside of that 5e ecosystem, and then just starting to bring stuff in. Like I would just pull adventures offline and sort of like meld them together, throw in DCC stuff into like Ravenloft. And then I found myself on my summers just like downloading PDFs and just reading like every game possible. You know, during quarantine, during COVID, right? You know,
yeah.
I started to buy games from Exalted Funeral as maybe a stress and control. I'm fortunate enough that being a teacher, I had no impact on my income instability. While COVID was definitely difficult, financially, it wasn't for me. And so one of the things I like about zines and small games is that I can directly support the artist and creator. So I'm just buying games left and right. I'm running games online weekly now when we were all fully online just because there was nothing else to do. So I start playing a lot more and start collecting more. And then listening to podcasts, really.
Oh, yeah.
Listening to other people play different games and be like, oh, these are the kinds of stories that you can tell. Friends at the Table is very influential to me in regards to storytelling and what can be told. Also, during the past year or two, I've been listening to more horror podcasts. Listening to Old Gods of Appalachia, the Magnus Archives, the White Vault, all of which deal with these similar horror, cosmic horror themes. And then spring of this year, I listened to the first episode of The Lost Bay. By the time I started listening, there was like 3 or 4 episodes out. And so I ended up listening to them each day as I remember distinctly I'm washing dishes. So I was doing chores. I was like just immersed in it, and then sort of get this idea that, hey, I can make a game too.
So while he's brainstorming about designing a game, Goblin Archives is playing concurrently a Mothership and an Electric Bastionland campaign. He wants to write a lightweight system like the ones he plays, and decides to build Liminal Horror as a hack of Cairn, the game by Yochai Gal.
I become enamored with, you know, the structure, the principles, just like how it is. It's so succinct. And then I thought, what about a Call of Cthulhu cosmic horror modern Cairn? You know, I'd read some Lovecraft before,
yeah,
but Lovecraft has a lot of problematic issues with it.
Sure.
You know, him especially. I took the SRD for Cairn and rewrote it to fit that sort of modern theme. The couple big sticking points for me to get started, though, were determining how I could approach cosmic horror without it being so stigmatizing for mental health.
And this is where Cairn comes into play. In Cairn, there's a mechanic called scars. Scars affect the characters, but allow them to evolve and to grow. Goblin adapted the Cairn scars into what he called the Fallout system.
I loved that, like, scars and like what you find is how your character grows. I wanted there to be an impact when you encounter the weird, the strange, the horrific, but I didn't want it to be your character goes crazy. I created this table of 20 different Fallouts that are almost completely narrative based. Some of them do have mechanical growth attached to them, and I went back and forth on whether to include that or not. And all of them are meant to be a potential story seed for future like things that happen, right? So like some of them are, there's a door that you see out of the corner of your eye all the time, but cannot open. I used that framework and structure the way Karen did it because I thought it was so effective.
Yeah.
And I felt like building that up and using that structure allowed me to sort of spread my wings as a new game designer because I didn't have to also create and learn a new information flow. I could instead use one that worked well, that was built specifically to be open to others, and then take that and try to run with it in my direction, which was bring it to a modern setting.
So Goblin Archives' design journey was fueled by the community. The podcast C was listening, the support of the members of the NSR Discord server, the server created by Yochai Gal, Cairn itself, he was able to modify and tweak for his own project. And so as he was building his own game, supported by the community, Goblin decided to find a way to give back what he was learning.
The fun thing is, every single step of this journey on making Liminal Horror has been new learning. And luckily, I love learning.
Okay.
I'm a teacher who's now transitioned to work mostly with adults and so facilitate adult learning. And a lot of those tools and the skills that make that effective, I've tried to bring in regards to how I help other people join into the community. I created the Annotated Archive of Game Design Resources. I took all of the things that I found that helped me start out because I didn't know anything about layout, web design, visual design, anything really. They'd always interested me, but I hadn't done any of it. I started to take all of the different pieces. So the subjects are like SRDs,
yeah,
programs you could use, layouts and fonts, images. And so I started to like take the Twitter threads and the different blog posts that I'd found and bring them together into a single place so that I could lower the barrier for entry into someone making a thing for themselves. The way the barrier was lowered for me.
The Annotated Archive of Game Design Resources is online and free for everybody to access.
It always comes back to me around play. Like, we do this to play games.
Yeah.
And I love to play games with people. You know, when there are gaps in my schedule that I can fill with gaming, I'll reach out to be like, hey, do you want to be on a couple one-shots just for fun? Because the experiences at the table are what makes the memories for me. And so as someone who writes games now, I want to provide the tools in order to have those great experiences because that's the most important thing to me.
Little after the release of the core rules, Goblin Archive started working on an adventure inspired by John Carpenter's movie, The Thing. Now the mold is released, in print, by Exalted Funeral. It's written and laid out by Goblin Archives. The mind-blowing cover is by Zach Hazard. Interior art is by Professor Garbage Goat and Trevor Henderson. And editing is by the one and only Vi Huntsman. We recorded the following segment in early 2022 as Goblin Archives was running a crowdfunding campaign on the platform itch.io to bring the module to print.
It's been the idea I've had almost the entire time that I had Liminal Horror in my head. I was like, I want to do the thing, but set in a mall. Malls are the perfect dungeon, right? And slowly the actual concepts of like how it would work fell into place. But between when we last talked this fall and then this launching January 2nd was this sort of bigger push online in terms of itch funding and the possibilities that that opens up. I'm fortunate enough that with my job, I've been able to save to be able to self-fund, but getting good editors, getting good artists, it costs a lot of money. The mall became a thing that I just couldn't necessarily self-fund in a short amount of time. It would have just taken a long time to save.
Let me give you some context about funding with itch.io, also called itch funding. In early 2022, there's been a lot of talk about using the platform itch.io that you might know as a video game and indie TTRPG distribution platform for crowdfunding purposes. The YouTube channel Plus One EXP organized several YouTube lives about why and how we could use itch instead of the better known Kickstarter.
Yeah, my question is, there's no time limit in itch funding. So how do you relate to that? Like, did you give yourself like a time limit?
I tried to really build it in a self-sustaining way that nothing that I'm promising won't come about by lack of funding or having funding take a long time. And so the way I laid it out is I set it for 2 months, but the thing with itch funding is I can continually push the date for however long you want it to be. And unlike Kickstarter, after the funds clear an itch, like I can pull them out and start commissioning. And so the second I have my editing funds ready, which I already do, I send it to Vi and start editing and start that process. And then once I get the next group of funding for Zach, I'll release that to him. And then when I get the next funding for my friend, Professor Garbage Goat, I'll release the funding to him to do some art for the inside. And so slowly it'll grow and I'll keep putting it up onto the itch page as it's growing. But I did start it with an already viable product that I've run multiple times. I could see someone, though, starting it with an idea and then doing the same process as sort of like they could live build and design a game.
Yeah.
And as people slowly join on to the itch funding, they can watch that process.
Itch funding is much more malleable than Kickstarter. You can basically lay out the campaign as you wish. Goblin Archive set several backing levels, and some of them came with very unusual rewards for backers, like watch a horror film with Goblin Archives, or talk with him about a project you are designing. And again, this was sparked by the Plus One EXP Itch funding series on YouTube, so you get it right after you finish listening to this episode. Go on YouTube and watch the entire series on itch funding.
I wanted to find tiers of backing that I could offer just in general, even removed from the mall. I wanted them to be things that are enjoyable, not only for me, but for whoever backs them. And I already have one backer for the movie time.
Oh, yeah.
So some of the super special backer tiers is what I called them, where one was called design time, where I offered to meet with someone to talk about designing either a system, an adventure, or just a session they were going to run. I did put a note, though, that if someone were wanting to design something for a liminal horror, that they shouldn't back that. They should just reach out to me. To me, and maybe it's just the position I'm in, I tried to frame all of this around, like, design should still be fun. Making the games should be fun. There is stress, of course, and there's nervousness, and having people look at your work and not funding and all of that is still there. But I really try to frame as much as what I do as being like, this is a thing that I love. It's a community I love being a part of. And so the fact that I get to do it with some financial support too is cool. And so I try to frame all my decisions around like, how can I maintain like my level of engagement and how can I engage and uplift others in participating?
The Mall has successfully funded. It's now available in print via Exalted Funeral. And as of now, early September 2022, Goblin Archives has released a second module called The Bureau, also published by Exalted Funeral and co-written with Josh Domansky. Following next is the last interview I did with Goblin Archives. We recorded this segment in July 2022, a few days before the release of the printed versions of The Mall and The Bureau.
Oh, I was like just sort of reflecting that it's been interesting because each time we've recorded, I've been a very different designer in terms of my understanding of what I'm working on.
What has changed for you as a designer? What's different now?
You know, more people are playing my games and there's all that part to it. I wrote this game I was really proud of and put it out, but I didn't really understand what I could end up doing with it. I knew I wanted to grow it. And I wanted it to be something that others made stuff for. I wanted to follow the Sean McCoy, build a community around your game and support it. But I didn't know what that looked like yet. And now having put out The Mall and The Bureau at the same time in physical print, I'm seeing people posting pictures with them. And that brings me immense joy. And what I've realized is I've created a system that is adaptable to such different types of horror and different types of games with very small tweaks that I think that it is something that really meets a lot of people's needs and desires for when they think of a modern horror game.
Speaking of like growing the game and You told me once that you will try to put out tools that players and GMs can use for different styles of adventure and of playing that integrate with liminal horror.
So having written two very different styles of horror games, I feel like I've identified how one goes about tweaking liminal horror to be what they need it to be. To me, it's changing your character creation to be specific to the type of like story you're going to tell, like what backgrounds and that kind of stuff. So, and that's just like writing a few words down and having them choose from that instead of choosing the backgrounds from the book.
That's great.
Changing the fallouts to be more specific to whatever evil or monster or abyss or whatever it is you're going for, like weird, having it reinforce that. And then I found that if you create a modular mechanic to give a third reinforcing point, I think that that makes it so you can be pretty successful. For the mall, I integrated whisper cards, which were the way that characters secretly were replaced by the thing. And then in the bureau, we had these resonant artifacts that are these super powerful, super weird, sort of messed up objects of power. And they've fundamentally changed the tone of the games to fit the needs of the story that's being told. And so what I've started to do is, like, I started a blog, like every designer tends to do. And I've just been putting out modular rules that you can add to your table. I have one that's going to come out that will be like a flashback mechanic. I have one that's like tags for like just ways that you can make the game more complex and reinforce what you're wanting to do.
Yeah, that's really great. A great way to think game design, like something that has like flexible shape and that adapts itself to serve like the mood or the setting of the adventure.
The Mall is a beautiful 34 pages black and white zine with a fantastic cover art by Zach Hazard.
And a quick warning, in the following segment there will be a few spoilers. So if you're planning to play either The Mall or The Bureau, you might want to skip to minute 29. You could just listen to this segment once you play the modules.
The Mall is a horror scenario that has players as either employees or visitors to a 1990s mall in Oregon have two things happen. One is that the mall gets ripped out of time and space, and so they're physically trapped there. And then the second part, which is maybe more concerning, is the fact that there is a thing-style monster that is eating, assimilating, and replicating people. And so how this looks in play is you have players trying to figure out, oh my gosh, how am I going to get out of here? How are we going to survive? And then they slowly start to realize that, hey, this monster is looking like other people. And then they start to realize, hey, this monster could be looking like other people at the table.
So the way players know if their character is turning into the thing or monster is they draw cards which have prompts. Those cards are called whispers, and the content of the cards is not revealed to the other players, nor to the GM.
I watched the movie and I like sort of noted how people acted and responded, and I used those to help inform the prompts I put. Some of them are like, get in someone's face, question someone. There are these like narrative prompts for someone to act upon. But the player is the only one who ever sees this card. So they get to choose how to interpret it. And sometimes that openness can take a little bit for people to get used to. Like the direction is to act on it, but they don't have to. One of the things I wanted to carry from the thing is how us, the audience, like we don't know. Like we don't know if Kurt Russell has been replaced at the end. Like we're left with the sense of unknown and tension that builds and builds and builds. I don't know if other people have been replaced. We're playing a horror game. Sometimes our characters make odd or weird or concerning decisions. And I wanted it to be where the other players at the table, even me, the facilitator, doesn't know if that's because, oh, that's just this character role-playing in the stress of the situation, or if they've actually, they're actively working against us.
The second official module for Liminal Horror is The Bureau, written by Goblin Archives and Josh Domansky. Here's Goblin about it.
They said, hey, I'm wanting to write a module for Liminal Horror, and I think I would like to co-write it. Are you interested? The pitch was, it's Control meets Gradient Descent.
Control is an action horror video game developed by the Finnish studio Remedy Entertainment, and Gradient Descent is a module, a mega dungeon, for the sci-fi horror tabletop RPG Mothership.
Gradient Descent is truly something special. It's the thing I've run the most. There's nothing like it. So I looked at my schedule and I was like, I don't know if I have time for this, but I couldn't say no. And I am the most glad I didn't say no, because writing that with Josh has been one of my most favorite things I've done in tabletop.
How did that work, co-writing? I mean, like working together.
So this had been an idea that had been in Josh's mind for quite a while. And so they had a really great spec document in terms of like the overall scope and sort of what kinds of things would need to be written, which helped because then when I came in, we talked it through and started to like really nail down specifics in terms of how things worked. Then Josh wrote 3 floors and then I wrote 2 floors and then we edited each other's stuff. And then we sort of like went back and forth. It was a constant sending of stuff like, hey, here's what I wrote. Here's what I wrote. Here's what I wrote. And then the front matter and the back matter, we like co-wrote or divvied up based on like what was our interests. Like I wrote like the monster stats and we each wrote different objects of power and then would go and edit and give each other feedback. And it was super motivating. And for me, when I see like Josh wrote one of the floors, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so great. And then I was like, okay, now I need to write mine and I want to make Josh proud. And then we just sent it back and forth and gave tweaks. When I look at the text itself, it feels cohesive, even though it is two people writing it. The Bureau is a government organization that takes catalogs and contains objects of power or like things that have incurred from other like dimensions and things like that.
They are called resonant artifacts in the module. Something goes wrong with these artifacts and something called the shadow starts infecting and changing the Bureau and the characters who are inside it. Players play characters who, for some reason, are trapped inside the Bureau when this transformation occurs.
We have all these custom backgrounds. We call them operational experiences, reasons why you end up in the lobby. Some of them are related to the Bureau. Some of them are very much not. Someone's like, oh, you're an intern. Oh, you're delivering food for the day. And you end up getting locked in. And the only way to get out is to go down.
Of course.
The overarching goal is to end the director's lockdown so you can leave the building. It's multiple floors as you go deeper and deeper. And then you start to realize what the problem is. And so sort of the horror of the Bureau is governmental systems that use things for their own power and means are not good. And like we press against that explicitly. And the characters, as they go deeper, have to engage with that and understand that sort of that background and that context. The skateboarder who came into the Bureau got all these changes. And now like, what do you go back to when you leave? Like you are different now. Like
yeah.
You've come up to the darkness and like maybe conquered it, you know? But like, what's left afterwards?
Goblin Archives' next project is a collection of pamphlets for liminal horror inspired by Bayocean. Bayocean was a city on the coast of Oregon that was eaten by the ocean a few decades ago. In Goblin Archive's alternate version of Beotian, it still exists in another timeline or dimension. And this is a project I'm a little involved into because I'm producing some sound accessories for it.
So it's all within a region. It's all within Oregon. Everything I write is within Oregon because it's the only place I've ever known. The pamphlets themselves, I think each one I'm going to be writing is inspired by a different horror film. It's an excuse that I can watch horror movies and say I'm doing work. One is a haunted school. Another one I'm watching I want to do is Messiah of Evil. Watching these, taking inspiration from them, and writing a pamphlet adventure. But there's another layer to this that I really want is to make this space, this town, this region feel real as much as possible. And so one of those things that I think really captures a space is, what are the sounds of the space? Not only the sounds of nature, but like sounds on the radio, right? Driving late night. And so being on the Oregon coast too, there are large parts without cell service because you're in a rainforest going over mountains. And so there's times where all you get is a crackly radio. Tying that in with this idea of, if this is a world where weird things happen, there would definitely be a radio show about them. With Eco, we're doing a thing to try to capture some of the soundscapes of Oregon that would interplay between diatribes about the weird goings on and music, like music on the radio.
I mean, that's something I'm super excited about. We're going to produce like the sound of that radio. And because of a very unique and lucky coincidence, years ago, I've met a person who is a sound recordist. Like they're like an artist sound recordist. They record sounds of nature, and they happen to live in Oregon, and they recorded a lot of nature sounds in the Bay Ocean area. So we're going to use actual sounds recorded in the place where the collection of pamphlets you're writing is located. And I mean, that's absolutely great. That's so great. So
yeah, I'm super excited for it. I think that as much mixed media that can be integrated with RPGs, I think is just so fun. How we can integrate other senses or other medias only benefits and helps build this layered narrative.
Are you aiming at a number of chapters or pamphlets for this new adventure? Are you going to release all the pamphlets together?
You know, I have this overarching vision for what I want it to be, but the actual specifics I don't just yet. And so I get to discover it myself. I get to make the pushpin board in order to write it. This will be my first time writing pamphlets. I understand they have different complexities than writing a full module, but just the amount of words and space and scale will allow me to do them slightly faster, I think. Fingers crossed. So anyone could be playing these in isolation as just like an adventure for their table. It doesn't have to be Bay Ocean specific, but once I start to get more and collect them together, I do want it to sort of have this overarching meta narrative almost. But I want people to have content to play. And so I would be putting it out as I finish them, probably on Itch, probably for a couple bucks with community copies. I don't know the price point just yet, but my goal is to get it to people's tables.
If folks want to follow like the progress, what's the best way for them to see what you're doing, to connect with you?
The best way to find me probably, I would say, is Twitter. But not everyone uses social media in that way. And so I do have multiple modes. I try to have any big updates push in a few different ways. So there's a newsletter, there's Twitter, there's Itch. And so I try to be pretty responsive too. If someone has a question about the game, has a question about something you're wanting to write, feel free to reach out. I definitely love talking shop whenever I can. And I want to support people writing stuff because that's how I started too, is that the scene supported me. This podcast itself, like, planted that seed and idea. And then Yohai like helped immensely throughout the process of writing and answering my questions and helping me get the website up and helping me do that. And so to me, it's important to pass on to others that level of support and expose practice, because that's how we lower the barriers and bring great voices into the scene, and voices that don't just look like me. You don't see me, but I'm a white dude with a beard. Like, I want to be able to bring other people in that have different perspectives and support that.
This was Goblin Archives designer of Liminal Horror, a contemporary horror RPG, and of the modules The Mole and The Bureau. Tales from the Void, the Liminal Horror Game Jam, is running from September the 5th to November the 1st. As always, I'm going to put all the links in the show notes and on the episode page on the Lost Bay Studio website. You've listened to the Lost Bay Podcast, a show about and with indie tabletop RPG creators and designers. It's produced and edited by me, Iko. Edited supervision is by Laura Elle. Music is by Every Eyes. Additional music for this episode is by Neutral Audio Lab, Mr. Thinoroma, and Sergei Karamizinov. You'll find the full music credits in the show notes. If you want to be notified of future episode release, subscribe to the Lost Bay Podcast in your podcasting application right now, or subscribe to the newsletter at thelostbaystudio.com. Thanks a lot for listening, and until next time, stay well.